This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly on Bloomberg Radio.
All right, you are listening to Bloomberg Business Week. Trade, obviously, one of our big stories on this Wednesday, understandably. So phase one of the U.S.-China trade deal, it's done. We've got two great voices with us now to talk about this. David Riedel is president and founder of Riedel Research Group. He joins us on the phone from San Francisco. Also here with us in our Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studio right here in New York City, Stefan Selig. He is managing partner at Bridge Park Advisors, former undersecretary of commerce for international trade. This was during the Obama administration. So, gentlemen, great to have you here with us. Stefan, I want to start with you. This trade deal, phase one, phase two, expected shortly. I don't think we're necessarily expecting a phase three. We'll have to wait and see. What do you make of the news?
Well, I'm not sure, Carol, I'd expect a phase two so fast either. I mean, it did take the better part of 3 years to get to where we are today. And for sure, there was some real progress, and the administration deserves some real credit. But we haven't tackled what are the most difficult issues, which are the structural issues with the Chinese economy, broad market access for foreign firms, including U.S. businesses, as well as the state support of local firms, in particular the SOEs, the state-owned enterprises.
The subsidies that the government provides
the subsidies,
for its companies.
Exactly. And, you know, as a result of that, you know, I kind of have a balanced view of what was announced today, which is real progress has been made, but there's still real work left to do. And so I would think of this more as a ceasefire than actually a real ending of the conflict.
All right, so David Riedel, come on in here. Help us understand this from the Chinese perspective, because obviously we saw a lot of pomp and circumstance here in the United States down in Washington today, a full room with the president sort of name-checking so many people as we went through that whole process. But if you're over in Beijing, Shanghai, how are you viewing this deal?
Well, it's a transaction more than a deal, right? They didn't have to give up anything structural or related to their industrial policy, so that's a big win for Beijing. They are required to make some additional purchases of U.S. goods and services, quite a substantial amount, in fact, which will have a positive impact on the U.S. economy. There are also a couple of areas where things opened up a little bit for financial services companies and things like that, but really they didn't have to make any of the big structural changes, which they have no interest in making, about their industrial policy and how they run their economy. So they got some relief on some tariffs that had been implemented, so sort of causing a problem and then solving it, right, which is a transactional move for any negotiation, and then gave a little bit of market access, but it remains to be seen what the fundamental impact is on Chinese business.
I have to say, David, I wonder how much of this was really kind of a political agreement versus really a better trade agreement. And it feels like in some ways politics were much more at play, not just on the part of the U.S., certainly in an election year, but also on the part of the Chinese, who are facing, you know, some pressure at home to kind of, you know, get something done as well.
That's true. I would say that the political pressure is much more acute in the United States, where these taxes on American consumers in the form of tariffs were really exacting a toll, a political toll as well as an economic toll here at home. I've always said the Chinese have virtually unlimited ability to absorb tariffs. with their substantial reserves, their huge control of major swaths of the economy, and a very populace that's willing to go along with nationalistic themes. So I think the Chinese will take this as a win. They'll show some relief for their constituents without giving away the store, which is the way that they run their economy and their industrial policy.
So, Stefan, I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Steve Schwarzman earlier when he joined me from just outside the White House, having been in that room, which is, if you're an investor, if you're running a company, does this deal, transaction, agreement, whatever we want to call it, does it change your behavior in the near term, and how?
Yeah, so I think, Jason, the answer to that is a decided yes, because fundamentally what it does is reduces some of the uncertainty, it quells some of the fear, it gets rid of this notion that there's going to be further escalation. And as a result of that, I think this will be good for the markets, good for investors, and good for businesses. But it is not going to get to some of the long-term aspects that are still going to weigh on the minds of businesses going forward.
Stefan, do we need China like we used to need China? And does China need the U.S. like it used to need the U.S.?
You know, that's an interesting question, Carol. And historically, what has happened is we've become an integrated world,
right.
And supply chains have merged, and we've been moving in that direction. The question is now, are we going to become a bipolar world in which there's going to be a Chinese axis and a U.S. axis, and companies are going to arrange supply chains and businesses around that notion? Clearly would be less efficient for the global economy,
right.
And would cost U.S. and Chinese companies real growth. And that really remains to be seen, which is, are we going to figure out a system in which our economy and their economy are going to be able to coexist effectively and fairly over the long term? And there's no precedent for that, so we don't know.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
So, David, I want to make sure that we get to one specific question with you, which is, this is not just about the U.S. and China. We talk a lot about these two nations, and yet there's another very powerful country. We got a reminder of that today with Vladimir Putin essentially rearranging his own government. Russia has a role in this drama as well. Tell us about that.
They really do, and it's interesting because after trade, or maybe in front of trade, the biggest flashpoint of U.S.-China relations is the South China Sea and this massive territory grab that China has made into the South China Sea, through which a third of global trade travels, also tremendous oil reserves and fisheries reserves and so on and so forth. This has been a great frustration to their neighbors like Vietnam and the Philippines and other places who have overlapping claims on some of those territories. Now, here comes Russia, who has been in military maneuvers and exercises with China in recent years, but allowing for and encouraging oil exploration in these contested waters with joint ventures with companies in Vietnam and the Philippines. That's a fascinating way for Russia to insert themselves into this region and really playing a role for those U.S. allies to sort of needle China and push back on China's territorial ambitions without going directly into the arms of the U.S. So it's a fascinating development, and one I think we're all going to need to keep an eye on, because those three big powers contesting those important waters of the South China Sea could really be a flashpoint in the next 5 or 10 years.
Jason, but I would say that the Russian economy is still relatively
sure.
small,
yeah.
and it's very focused on natural resources. And in terms of the commercial relationship,
right.
Russia isn't particularly relevant.
It's the political
they are, as David said, from a geopolitical strategic basis, very relevant. But in terms of really global trade flows,
yeah.
Russia is, Europe is far more important.
Stefan Selig, still with us, managing partner, Bridge Park Advisors here in New York City. So just, before we get back into the trade deal, I do want to ask you, here on... You don't have to worry about those. You can just put them down.
That's become my favorite moment of the day. So
yeah, exactly.
So thank you very much.
You're also a deal-making guy. You're a Wall Street guy. What's the mood on Wall Street right now? It's bank earnings week.
Look, obviously, bank earnings, including my former employer, Bank of America, today were somewhat disappointing.
Yeah.
Fixed income trading, obviously, was a bright spot. But interest margins have been coming down. I think overall the U.S. economy is quite healthy.
Yeah.
And overall, that is the most important thing in terms of what is going to drive bank earnings going forward. And I think this conversation we're having about trade is clearly incrementally helpful for the reasons I've suggested, which is going to remove this cloak of uncertainty
right.
that has been over the economy. It's going to help at least drive some investment going forward by companies, and companies are going to be able to plan more effectively if they believe that this is going to be pushed to the side for the foreseeable future.
So one would expect that in terms of, companies, their attitude being more upbeat. Just got about 30 seconds here. We should expect to see more capital expenditures, right? Going out and doing things, whether it's buying plants, hiring more, or what have you.
Yes, and I guess the question is, Carol, is this going to be enough to really drive renewed foreign investment in the U.S.? Because this is not just a China story, right? We're still also fighting with Europe, for example,
right.
threatening a whole
right.
host of tariffs on cars and wine and a whole host of other things. And that is obviously going to give companies pause about further integrating supply chains. And it really comes back to your question, which are companies going to be looking to be less globally integrated going forward at the expense of the global economy?
Stefan Selig, still with us, managing partner, Bridge Park Advisors, also former Undersecretary of Commerce for International Trade at the U.S. Department of Commerce during the Obama administration. So here's the question. I'm going to use your phrase back to you. Was the light worth the candle for all of this trade? Full credit to you. I did not make that up. That's your phrase.
You should have
phrase.
Seen the look. That.
Well, I'm not sure I could have coined that phrase, but I certainly repurposed it. Look, I think, Jason, there were clearly some real costs to the U.S. economy. There were costs to our treasury. There were costs to our businesses. There are costs to our consumers. There are costs to our workers. But we did make some progress.
Mm-hmm.
I think at the end of the day, it's going to be hard to answer that question until we see if this presages a phase two or three deal.
Mm-hmm.
If the answer to that is yes, and this is a first step to a larger series of agreements that we're able to reach with China, I would say affirmatively that it was worth the pain in our economy. If the answer to that is no, I probably would have concluded that there would have been a more effective way to come to this conclusion than the way that the administration proceeded.
What do you think the administration did wrong?
Well, I'd say a couple of things, Carol. One is we did this unilaterally and didn't approach China with our friends and allies, which would have given us a much more effective bargaining position. Two is this focus on tariffs, I think, was misguided. I think the president believes that tariffs are paid were paid by China. I think the
right.
Economists have been pretty clear that that has not been the case. And I think thirdly, perhaps most importantly, is this focus on our bilateral trade deficit as being the right metric to focus on in terms of our trade relationship. And I think economists have also been clear that bilateral trade deficits are not the result of trade policy, but they are the result of consumption, savings,
right.
exchange rates, and to some degree, these purchases, the $200 billion of purchases which China has been committed to, are going to also come out of purchases by others. And it is not incremental. It is not a zero-sum game, unfortunately.
And so I guess as we look around the world, we think about Europe there, we think about USMCA. Carol likes to call it USMCA, but it's
an unfortunate acronym.
You obviously have no Marines in your family.
Yeah. Exactly. So what...
Navy, but not
where
Marine.
Else do we need to be worried about trade in the world from a U.S. perspective? Or what's the number one place that we should be thinking about?
Well, it would have to be Europe, right? Yeah. Because taken collectively, Europe is obviously our largest trading partner. The Canada and Mexico thing seems to have largely have been solved with USMCA. One could have asked the same question, was the light worth the candle in terms of all of that drama?
Right.
Because most of the things we got in USMCA were frankly in the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which I spent so many years working on in my government service, but it was helpful, and that's put to the side. And so I think the next big dog in the room is going to be how we interact with Europe and the EU, and as a part of that, obviously, with the United Kingdom.
I was going to say with the UK, I mean, that to me becomes one of the more interesting conversations, not the least of which because you've got Trump versus Johnson, or Trump and Johnson together. Talk about
yes,
a couple unpredictable
although,
guys.
Although
right?
I would say, Jason, that don't forget both our economy and their economies are open economies.
Yes.
And so our issues are incremental issues. We don't have substantive tariffs between
right.
our two countries. We have broad-based open markets and market access for our companies. The United Kingdom is a huge investor in the U.S. and vice versa. So clearly, while there are things to do, there's not kind of the big tall trees to chop down.
Right.
Stefan, I have to ask you, are we as a nation being left behind because we are pursuing rather than multilateral, you know, trade deals and doing bilateral, especially with a country like China in terms of its role in this global economy? Are we making a big mistake that's going to hurt us for years to come? Because I do feel like China is exploring multilateral agreements around the globe.
They are, and they're doing their own version of the TPP, the RCEP.
Correct.
The one thing I would say, Carol, is it's hard to leave the United States out of any global commercial economic discussion, given the size and strength and importance of our economy.
Even though it feels like we're pulling back?
Well, what I would say is we're not going to be, to use your phrase, left out. Is it going to cost us growth? Might it cost us jobs? I think the answer to that is yes. And I think equally as importantly, what is going to be the impact to peace and prosperity globally? So don't forget this system that we've created since World War II has led to the longest period of time without a major power conflict. It has led to a period of time where we bought more people out of poverty around the world because of this global integration. And the question is, how is that going to slow down, and what is going to be the ancillary knock-on effects to the U.S. that aren't just narrowly commercial and economic?
All right.
Love having you here.
Catching up with you. Thank you so much for spending so much time with us. Stefan Selig, Managing Partner, Bridge Park Advisors, and of course, former Undersecretary of Commerce for International Trade at the Department of Commerce.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum, powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.